Today's podcast is brought to you by the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier BOGO offer. This offer expires Sunday, March 24th. To order yours today, go to EdenPureDeals.com and use code GRACEBOGO.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice. Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and The Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Grace Curley Show. I am Aaron Chadbourne in for Grace Curley. We'll be here all week. And it's already a busy day. It's been all Trump all the time with Donald Trump getting a favorable ruling, I think, from the appeals court, reducing the bond that he would have to pay in order to appeal his judgment. So reducing it from $454 million down to $175 million, which Trump says he has liquid cash now. He'll pay it within 10 days. But big victory for him there that'll allow that appeal to go forward. And then on the heels of that, we're hearing about them scheduling his next trial in the hush money case, which someone has texted in to say that it wasn't about a deduction. I know they're charging him because they're saying it was, you know, what are they using? Federal election law. They're saying it was improper contribution. I mean, there are a lot of ways in which they're trying to stand on their head and squint at the law in order to try to make something stick. I think the hush money one is one of the stupider cases they brought against him. Earlier, the district attorney wasn't even going to bring it. They're bringing him now for political reasons. So if you're Donald Trump, it's a good day. And it's, I think the contrast between him and Joe Biden are pretty stark. And then right now, you know, they're starting a briefing at the White House, Green Jean-Pierre having a briefing. And I think the topic there is Israel. And here's how I feel about Joe Biden just handling a foreign policy. When the Ukraine conflict started and Russia came in and everyone was unified that we should stand up and protect Ukraine, Biden took a bunch of half measures. They said, oh, we'll do a little bit to help Ukraine, but we don't want to make the Russians mad. Well, the Russians were already mad. They were already at war. They gave Ukraine a little bit of here, a little bit there, a lot over time, but never enough to actually help them finish the job, end the war. And some say they even kept them from agreeing to negotiated ceasing of hostilities. Biden administration stood in the way of ending the war. Well, so now we're at a point where the public has grown weary of it. They no longer want to support it. And that's when Biden's now doubling down, saying, oh, we got to do everything we can. Well, you had the chance and you didn't do it. Same thing now with Israel. Israel, oh, we're 100% in. We're 100% in. Then Biden's like, maybe, but we want you to do it our way. So could you actually, Israel, send over your commanders to take a break from prosecuting this war against Hamas? Send them over to D.C. We'll chat with them at Camp David, and then you can go back to your war. Well, Israel says, okay, look, we really appreciate your support. We're going to meet with you. But then the U.S. kind of undermined them at the U.N., and so Netanyahu was like, all right, never mind. We're not sending our people over. This is a mess. The U.S.-Israel relationship is already fraught to begin with. It's a tricky one. What's going on in the Middle East? But everyone agrees that Israel had the right to defend themselves and go after Hamas. Now there's talk about the humanitarian crisis in Gaza, and the U.S. wants to tell Israel what to do, but they're not going to have their back when it comes to other people. And I thought it was interesting. There was this horrific terrorist attack in Russia on Friday, and it comes at a time, and it was similar. It was similar in so many ways to the October 7th attack by Hamas in Israel. It was an ISIS group that attacked civilians at a concert in Russia. And by the way, what is Russia's response? First of all, to blame Ukraine, which whatever, they're blaming Ukraine for everything. But they want to go after the terrorists who committed it, just like Israel wants to do. But when Israel wants to do it, Russia and the other powers in the world, the UN, they don't want to stand with Israel because they don't like Israel. And so I think what we're seeing play out is we're going to continue to see these double standards. We're going to continue to see believe one way. And the way in which the U.S. is kind of mansplaining to Israel how they need to conduct this war, how they need to conduct this conflict. I mean, either give them what they need or don't. Like, go all in or don't go all in. Like, at some point, you have to respect the sovereignty of other nations, or you make your aid conditional, one or the other. But you can't have it both ways. And I think the fundamental thing about the Biden administration is that they're inept at what they do. They don't know how to do anything well. And in foreign policy, I think they made the world a less safe place. They've gotten us into more danger. And no longer are people scared about the United States. No longer do they think the United States word means what it says, that we're going to actually prosecute a war with the full strength, that we're going to actually finish the job. They're looking at us now and saying they can wait us out, or they can undermine it. And that's how it is. And so I think Biden makes us less safe. I think what they're doing with the UN is a mistake. I would make your decisions based on what you think is the best course of action. And I think that we're going to see that. I'll be interested to hear what Admiral Kirby is now up at the podium. But by the way, have you heard about the tension between Karine Jean-Pierre and John Kirby? I mean, it's already insulting to her that they have to bring him in anyway, right? They keep bringing him in, but he gets mad because everyone else that comes up at the podium gets to call on their own people. She insists that she gets to call on them for him, and she treats him differently than she treats other people because she's trying to assert herself in there. But if you could do the job, do the job. But I think she's been the least qualified person to stand behind that podium that we've seen, maybe except for... Do you think, Jared, is she more or less qualified than the Mooch, than Scaramucci?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Another,
right?
The Mooch, another historical appointment. I actually think she might be more well-equipped to do this than the Mooch.
Right, well,
that's saying something.
Speaking of people that got rich after Donald Trump did so much for that guy, and now he's made so much money as a result of having been Trump's communications director, press secretary. He was all of it for like
11 days.
That maybe that should have been the poll question. Do you think Ronna McDaniel's contract with NBC will last more or shorter than Scaramucci at the White House? The Mooch was a great character. That was a fun week. But I think that he might be the only press secretary I can think of less talented at doing the job than Karine Jean-Pierre. Because for Jen Psaki, I didn't like her, and I knew that she was lying, but she was good at it, right? She was good at lying. She was good at, like, the circle back and keeping them in shape and commanding the attention. Karine Jean-Pierre, you just get the sense that she was given a job that she wasn't prepared for or qualified for and didn't know what to do, and they've just kind of hung her out to dry. And then they do things like this where they bring in John Kirby to actually take the hard questions, and it just undermines her. But then meanwhile, she goes out and talks about what a historic figure she is and how honored she is to be historic. But I think the split screen helps Trump. I think the split screen of the Biden administration being in chaos and shambles when they were supposed to be the adults in the room versus Donald Trump, who we keep saying is the biggest threat to democracy. But the only way to beat him isn't at the ballot box. It's by somehow taking him out by all means necessary. I think that's the contrast that really people are going to keep seeing. And it's going to continue to influence how this election goes. So I think it all. I do want to talk about Boeing, and I don't know if I have enough time to get into it. But did you see the announcement this morning that Boeing CEO is stepping down, or he's going to retire at the end of the year? And I watched this hilarious interview with him on CNBC where he talked about how it's really just for personal reasons, how he's planning to retire at the end of the year. He wants to give the board a lot of time. That's really what it's all about. Like, no, it's not. It's about the fact that, like, your planes are falling apart and no one feels safe flying on them, and that the airlines have been embarrassed, that the flying public doesn't feel safe. Boeing's stock, I imagine, is a free fall. I mean, maybe they'd improved. I should look at what's happening with Boeing stock today. But then you saw they're changing their chief a board member. They're making leadership changes at Boeing, which my big question is, like, what took you so long? Like, this is a big crisis of confidence in one of the largest companies in the U.S. when they're one that you can't really, like, be like, oh, hey, like most of the doors stay on through the flight, but occasionally it might pop off. Like, the Boeing, like, it's been a very calamitous period of time for Boeing, and I think the leadership change. But, like, for them to pretend, And maybe it's this era of, like, you know, not having to be truthful that we're going through, where people can just say, like, oh, no. Like, it was really just for personal. Like, it was not for personal reasons. You were shown the door, just like Ronna McDaniel. Like, you didn't get to choose that you were leaving the RNC. You didn't get to choose that you were available for your NBC contract. It's you failed. You failed. Just own it. Like, whatever happened to people owning and being accountable for their failures? That would be so refreshing, because in the U.S., uniquely, you can't do this in other parts of the world, we love a good comeback story. But I can't root for your comeback if you're not agreeing with me that you failed in the first place. I think that's my litmus test. You have to be willing to admit that you lost, that you failed. Then we'll root for your comeback. And I think that's what, you know, I just wish we got more from our people, whether you're a business leader or a political leader. Just be honest about the fact that, like, you're not leaving for personal reasons. You're leaving because you've run the company into a really tough position. You're announcing on the same day that the CEO is stepping down, the head of the commercial division of airplanes is stepping down. Oh, it's just a coincidence. They both had personal events happen at the same time. No, it's because you failed. You made your company unsafe, and the airlines and the public don't trust you. And so, goodbye. I mean, move on, or happy retirement. But also, like, if it's so urgent, like, why are we giving him till the end of the year? I guess because you need to do a search for a replacement. You need to set, but no, if you were the problem, like, goodbye, be gone tomorrow. Like, just move on. Speaking of moving on, we're going to take some time for a break, but I do want to pause for a moment, Jared, and think about, you know, when you get stressed out, whether you're in Maine, you're sitting in Maine without power right now because we had this crazy storm over the weekend. You guys got spared in Massachusetts. But if you're sitting there, you're without power, don't you just think, like, what a good time it would be to escape the winter, go out, enjoy the ocean, and you could do that at Nassau Beach Inn.
Yeah, it's a getaway that's not far away. I have stayed at the Nassau Beach Inn, as many of us here associated with the Howie Carr Radio Network have, and I loved it. My wife and I went down there in December, actually. It was right around Christmas, so the trees were up. It was great ambiance. But that just emboldened the ambiance that you're going to get when you're down at the Nassau Beach Inn. The tranquility, you can... Your steps from the beach, so you can just walk along the beach. You can hear the ocean, and you have to worry about crowds this time of year and fighting for space. We sat by the fire pits because they have fire pits. So when it gets a little chilly, as it tends to this time of year at night, you can be nice and warm by the fire pits. And in the morning as well, we drank our morning coffee, watched the sunrise. It was great. The views there are incredible. Every room is steps from the beach. You can't go wrong. And every room has a fireplace and a nice big picture window in case it gets really cold or it's rainy or you just want to stay inside and be cozy on a nice day. You can do that at the Nassau Beach Inn. And right now, listen to these prices, because these are great prices that you're not going to find in a lot of places, especially on the Cape. Right now, you can book your April stay at the Nassau Beach Inn from $249.99 a night. And this May, rates are from $259.99 a night. Don't delay, because these rooms go fast. Nassau Beach Inn is pet friendly. It has a view from every room, and check-in is contactless. It's a great way to get away, not far away. I love it. I know you will too. To reserve your ocean view room, go to NassauBeachInn.com. That's NassauBeachInn.com.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is the Grace Curley Show.
We're back on the Grace Curley Show. I'm not Grace Curley. I'm Aaron Chadbourne. I'll be here all week broadcasting today up in Maine. I'll be in studio with you tomorrow, Jared. We'll be coming. I'll be on the Rumble Cam. It'll be exciting. I'm looking forward to it. I also look forward to hearing what you think on the poll question, because I have my own thoughts on this. I watch Meet the Press. And so I was watching yesterday when I saw Kristen Welker have a meltdown and then Chuck Todd have a meltdown about Ronna McDaniel. And it led me to today's poll question. Today's poll question brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly. Contact him at localsilvermint.com. Jared Diglio, what is today's poll question and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is which paid NBC News personality do you trust the least? Ronna McDaniel, Jen Psaki, Simone Sanders Townsend, Chuck Todd, Kristen Welker, or Brian Williams?
I think I still say Chuck Todd. I think Chuck Todd is the most annoying. I don't like Kristen Welker, but like she's a non-entity. Like you don't really see her. She's condescending, but she's like, you know, like very obvious. Chuck Todd, though, like he, the smugness, the posturing, the fact that he thinks that like he comes off as neutral. Like, I think that's what I dislike. Although Jen Psaki, like if she's speaking, she's probably lying. But Chuck Todd, I think I pick.
Chuck Todd is the perennial bridesmaid in today's poll question. Still in second place. Can't quite overtake the lead. 37%.
He's been closing the gap,
Chuck,
though. He's only 3% off.
Yeah. 40 for Jen Psaki. Well in the lead. 37% for Chuck Todd. 10% each for Ron McDaniel and Brian Williams. Kristen Welker and Simone Sanders Townsend each at 2%.
See, the Simone Sanders Townsend thing, like there was no outrage over her, like that they have her on as an analyst to say like, oh, like, how do you think Kamala Harris is doing as vice president? She was her comms person. Like she worked for her and like couldn't wait to quit so that she could go say positive things about her. Meanwhile, everyone that worked for Kamala Harris hated it. Like it was dysfunctional. It was horrible.
You know, everybody knows your name.
We should do a show of just all Kamala Harris clips. We'll do that one day.
I eat no for breakfast.
Like it's you can't make it up. This is, again, I've said it and I've said it to Grace before too, is that I think when you look at Joe Biden and all of his misspeaking and all of the all of his flubs, you always think like, where does George W. Bush go for his apology? Because they were merciless to him. They made him like the stupidest person ever. Anything that he said, whenever he misspoke or mispronounced, like they were merciless. And Biden does it on the regular, not as often because they don't let him speak in public. That's it. They control it. It's so limited. But I think, you know, maybe Kamala Harris, like if you had to rate who had the most verbal gaffes between Biden, Kamala, and George W. Bush, who is number one? Biden? Biden's probably number one, right? I think Biden's probably number one. But Kamala is a close, because like she thinks she's making sense. Like she thinks she's making sense. And I don't know if she's like just like going impromptu, if this is what was prepared for her and it's bad staff work, but like she must think that she's doing a good job. And that's the big thing here. It's like, I think, you know, like if you have the awareness that you know that you're like floundering, that you know that you're not doing a good job, that's one thing. But if you are Kamala Harris and you perform the way that you do, and like every time you're like, yep, nailed it, I think that's way, way worse. Kind of like this Boeing CEO that thinks that he did a great job and that he's just taking part in responsible succession planning, announced that they axe everybody in a leadership role at Boeing because you've made airplanes unsafe. You've made the public afraid to fly because they're worried that a door is going to pop out of the middle of the plane. They're worried about whether or not, I mean, I don't know how Pete Buttigieg is avoiding responsibility so far, because airplane and air travel has gotten so much less safe since he's been in charge of it. But I don't know. People like that look at themselves in the mirror every morning or every night and say, yep, great job. Heck of a job, Brownie. Like that's what they're saying to themselves. And I think that's how delusional Kamala Harris is, which is why, going back to our earlier topic about who Trump should choose as a running mate, I just wanted to see someone who's going to stick it to Kamala Harris and remind people every single day. It's one of the things that Nikki Haley did in her campaign that I liked. There are very few of them. Very few things I liked about the Haley campaign. But one of them that I liked is she reminded people that there's a high likelihood if you vote for Joe Biden that Kamala Harris is going to be president. And I think we can't lose focus of that, because Joe Biden in his 80s is a frail man who barely is in charge of his capabilities now. So to think that he's going to live another 4 years and be president the second term, I mean, it's a big stretch to think that could happen. It could happen. People are living longer these days. You look at, you know, other octogenarians that are doing fine. Okay, cool. Maybe he lives. But is there an increased likelihood? With every day that passes, there's a higher likelihood that Kamala Harris becomes the next president of the United States. And I would like to see a vice presidential candidate that brings that case to Kamala Harris and says, oh, you think you're qualified? You think you're qualified to be vice president? You think you're qualified to be president? What are you talking? That's why I like Tulsi Gabbard. And Tulsi Gabbard just like gets under her skin and annoys her. Kind of like when Trump was running against Hillary Clinton and he brought all of Bill Clinton's accusers to the Remember, he put them in the box, and you could watch, you could see the facial expression of the Clintons being like, man, like, I can't believe I have to subject myself to this. I can't believe that there's actual transparency and accountability, and they're holding me accountable for something I did in the past. I can't believe I actually have to run for election. That's what I want to see. I want to see that disdain on Kamala Harris's face with whoever Trump picks. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne in for Grace. Much more show coming on up.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Texter says, Keith Richards is 80. Big abuser of drugs as he was. He's getting ready to go out on tour again. Biden can't even stay up late enough to go see the show. But Biden has to eat his ice cream. You know, like Biden will get his dairy intake in. That's
I want
what he
a double dip waffle cone with chocolate, vanilla chocolate chip.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. I am your guest host this week, Aaron Chadbourne, former senior policy advisor to Governor Paula Page from the great state of Maine. We'll be in studio on the Rumble Cam tomorrow, so get ready. I got to pick out my outfit for what I'm going to wear that's going to come across best on there. Talking a lot today about Donald Trump and the ruling by the appellate panel that says, hey, $454 million is crazy high number, put up $170 million. They shout at Trump. They're like, oh, where are you going to get the collateral? And he goes, cash. And then he walks away, which is kind of a baller moment, already being memed across, probably across Truth Social, which I don't have an account on, and across Twitter, now called X. Sorry for the dead naming there. And then, so Trump's taking up most of the news today. I did want to talk about the vote that happened over the weekend to fund the government. It was, and a lot, I mean, there's a lot that's not really known about what was in it. And we're going to go through that thing we go through every time they fund the government, where we find all of this wasteful spending inside that's really going to infuriate you. But there's something that I want to reflect on, and it's the job that the Republicans are doing being in charge of the House. And my reflection is, it's not good. And it's not good, not because they resulted in a terrible spending bill, because I think if you're going to keep the government open, whatever deal you're going to have is going to have to be terrible. And Kevin McCarthy, very early on, kind of tied their hands and kind of agreed to a number. And he thought he was agreeing to it as a cap. And everyone in Washington, of course, said cap means maximum. That means that's we're going to spend every dollar. He should have known that. So either he got played or he was naive or he didn't care. And I think it's that he didn't care, because Kevin McCarthy's reputation is that he'd tell anyone what they wanted to hear with no intention of actually following through. And they held his feet to the fire and said, you agreed to this. That led him to get ousted and then led Mike Johnson to have to work within the confines of this number that he had put out there. So that being the case, what we now have is we have the Republicans that have agreed to deal. Did they spend time making it a little bit less worse, getting some things in there? I heard Bernie Sanders complaining this morning that it prohibited them funding that UN agency that's been helping to fund Hamas. So maybe there's some good stuff that they were able to sneak in. If Bernie Sanders is upset, I'm a little happy. Everyone seemed upset. But at the end of the day, if you're going to be in charge of Congress, you've got to prove to the American people you can actually do the job. And my biggest complaint is that they look dysfunctional. So the caucus that ousted Kevin McCarthy, they never were clear about what they thought they could do that was better. They have their laundry list of everything they want, right? Everything under the sun, but you're not going to get that. You're in charge of one half of one third of the government. You've got the House, the Senate's controlled by Democrats, the presidency's controlled by Democrats, the court is separate and on a better track than it's been in my lifetime. But you can't get everything. So you've got to pick your spots and you've got to pick your leverage point. And I think that was one of the failures over this border deal that fell apart, is that they gave it to the Senate to negotiate behind closed doors. That meant it was always going to be a terrible deal. Instead, they should have picked two or three things they were going to demand and say, in exchange for what you want, whether it's funding the government, aid for Ukraine, if that's going to be something you're going to pass anyway, we're digging our heels on these few very specific things. That's how you negotiate. And they're just bad negotiators. And not only are they bad negotiators, but they're giving up their leverage. The fact that they can't keep any of their colleagues in the House, that you have all of these Republicans, George Santos, they voted out, whatever, that guy's a joke, he was kind of funny. I think with term limits, you know, you don't need term limits in the House. You just can vote people out every 2 years. Cool. That would have gotten rid of him. No one thinks George Santos would run would win another election, although he's running again. Although, did you see this weird, bizarre announcement that he's running as an independent? Is it because he was worried about a primary? He was worried about, like, campaign? Like, what? Like, why? But whatever. He's running as an independent. But I think he would have lost. That would have taken care of it. But everyone else that's leaving, they're leaving to go do something else more productive. They're going to be a college president or to go take another job. Or they're just leaving to spite the Republicans they don't get along with anymore, like Mike Gallagher. Mike Gallagher was upset. They got in a fight over this Homeland Security thing. He didn't vote to impeach Mayorkas. And so he's taking his marbles and going home, and he's doing it a date after. So the Republican majority in the House, their margin on a vote, they can afford to lose one vote. One. They need everyone to play nice. And on any given bill, like, you know, you're going to have some knuckleheads that are going to just, you know, not upvote anytime. And maybe they're principled. Maybe they're principled. I don't mean to call them all knuckleheads, but there are going to be times. But Marjorie Taylor Greene, I have a hard time taking seriously just based on how she conducts herself. So Marjorie Taylor Greene has now filed this motion to vacate the chair. And good for her. Go for it. Get the vote. I think the Democrats are going to have Johnson's back. But the Democrats are responsible for the last time. The fact that a small group of Republicans before banded together to vote against Kevin McCarthy, but every Democrat voted against Kevin McCarthy. The Democrats did it, and the Republicans like to fight with each other, and they like fighting much more than they like working together to prove they can actually do stuff. And so I give these Republicans a hard time because it's like, you got to actually show, if you're going to make the case that you want the American people to put your party in charge of the government, elect your candidate for president, elect you to the majority in the Senate and the House. When you actually have any modicum of leadership, you might need to actually do something positive with it. Look like you can actually lead, and they don't. But I did think Chip Roy was on one of the Sunday shows this week, I think with Jake Tapper on CNN, and he described what he didn't like. So let's go ahead and take clip 10.
But you know what I wanted? I wanted some sense of sanity on spending. Some sense of sanity on the border, some sense of sanity on any of the issues the American people actually care about. And we got none of that. We got a doubling down on the very thing that the people who send me to Washington, and I believe the vast majority of Texans and Americans, are frustrated with.
Now, Chip Roy, he's one of the ones that helped oust leader McCarthy, Kevin McCarthy. And again, Kevin McCarthy seemed to tell everyone what they want to hear and they're not really delivering his deal. So he made his bed. He had to lie in it. But Chip Roy, one of the people that, and he's saying, oh, we didn't get a good deal. Well, you know what, Chip Roy, what helps is if when your leadership goes to negotiate, they can go in and say, look, I have my caucus behind me. They're going to fight. If you agree to these things, I'm going to be able to deliver them. Basically, no matter what they agreed to, it was always going to look like there are going to be Republicans that aren't going to come with them. Mike Johnson, which I still don't even know, like, all right, Jared, tell me if I'm off base here, but if you had to, like, what's your favorite, like, fictitious political show? Like The Boys? Can you imagine if you were casting a guy, an actor, to play the Speaker of the House on, like, a ridiculous TV show like The Boys on Amazon? Doesn't Mike Johnson look like who you'd cast?
Oh, yeah. He is the perfect nondescript politician looking, kind of smart looking guy with big ears that you would put in
big
there.
Big ears, big glasses, kind of vacant expression. Looks like he's wearing makeup every time I see him. Again, from all I know, last time I filled in for Grace, I had Bruce Poliquin on, and Bruce served in Congress with Mike Johnson. He says great things about him, says he's a great guy, great character, great leader, true conservative, all the things, right? They say that, but by the same token, he doesn't look quite up to the job because, like, he was like the, like, 19th choice, right? They went through everyone else that couldn't get elected. And then they're like, how about Mike? Okay, Mike, I don't know who Mike is. We'll give Mike a shot. Why not Mike? I have no nothing bad to say about Mike. I don't know Mike. I know that he's trying to hang in there. He got government funding through. I think he'll survive Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate just because I don't see people going along with Marjorie Taylor Greene. But then again, I didn't see them going along with Matt Gaetz. And this is where NBC News, for all of your being offended by Ronna McDaniels being a paid analyst. Once they decided that they could let Matt Gaetz back on major news channels because he wasn't deplorable anymore because he was willing to go against Kevin McCarthy, you kind of ceded your moral high ground, right? Like, if you're willing to put on Matt Gaetz, but then not Ronna McDaniels, like, I just don't, it doesn't pass a straight face test. You've got to, you've got to actually like either enforce your standards or not, but not just like periodically be like, the standard is if you're willing to say mean things about Donald Trump, we'll let you on Republican. That's going to be your litmus test, is if you'll say exactly what we want you to say. And that's why, by the way, Kristen Welker, in all of her conversation, it was all so focused on being like, oh, but won't you agree with me? And if you won't agree with me, won't you tell us that you're hypocritical? Like, it was really like gotcha. And it was, I don't know. It was, I thought, embarrassing. If I were Ronna McDaniels, I don't know why I would subject myself to it. But I guess if you're getting a good payday, I just think that she's going to be the one that makes out in the end, because she's going to end up getting paid to go away. And that golden parachute, as you're calling it, Jared, I think that's going to be, I think if Trump weren't in the news today, we'd be hearing more about this, but Trump maybe did her a favor pushing her out of the news. But I do predict, maybe not by the end of today, I do predict that by the time Grace comes back next week, Ronna McDaniel will no longer have a contract with NBC. I think that's a good prediction. All right, we're careening toward the end of the show. I do want to hear from you. The phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, 844-500-4242. You're listening to The Grace Curley Show, and I'm your guest host this week, Aaron Chadbourne.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
We are back on The Grace Curley Show. I'm Aaron Chadbourne, sitting in for Grace. Thanks for joining us today. It's been a fun show, and I'll be here all week, so hopefully you enjoyed it. If you didn't, go ahead. You can text us. You can call. I can take it. But I love being here, and thanks to Grace and the team. It's a great team. I didn't get to talk much about immigration, and I do think that at the end of the day, when the election comes down to it, what people are seeing at the border, when they see the border overrun and National Guard being attacked by people who are trying to enter this country illegally and the president not do anything about it, I think that's going to really swing the election. I wanted to play, I know Karine Jean-Pierre was just briefing, I don't have any of her cuts right now, but I did want to play what she said the other day to Peter Ducey. Go ahead with cut 9.
So on this border video, what does President Biden think should happen to adult men who are assaulting and overpowering U.S. National Guardsmen?
Well, let me just first say we're grateful, and I said this moments ago, to Border Patrol agents to quickly work and get the situation under control and apprehend the migrants. So I want to be really clear that everyone who was apprehended by Border Patrol, they were able to do their job, even though it's made it more, even though Republican governor, in particular Governor Abbott, has made it difficult for them. They need more resources. We need more personnel. I mean, we have to have the backs of our law enforcement on the ground who are dealing with this every day. But Republicans are getting in the way. Republicans in Congress do not want to help. And you have a governor, Governor Abbott, who's politicizing it. That is what's
Governor Abbott is not politicizing it. Governor Abbott and the people of Texas want the border to be secured and defended. They're the ones that are trying to actually put up barriers. They're trying to close things down. They're trying to stop and stem the flow. And the federal government is saying, get out of our way. Let us process more people and let them in. This whole thing with fentanyl, last night I was watching on 60 Minutes, they were talking about fentanyl coming in the border, and their defense was, oh, well, they're not coming in these illegal places. They're coming in through legal ports of entry. Even worse, that means that the Biden administration, what are you doing? You're actually failing at the illegal spots as well as the legal spots. You're the ones that you're saying that you're cracking down and we should trust you. And then you say, oh, well, Biden wants to do it, and then Republicans in Congress aren't helping, and the governor of Texas. All right, so what are you doing? And then from today's press conference, I don't know if you have it yet, Jared, but John Kirby gets asked, all right, so what executive action are you taking? Go ahead, play the cut if you have it. Do we not have it? That's all right. All right, so John Kirby, he gets asked, all right, what executive actions, you know, Biden said he was prepared to take them, Trump took them, and you know what John Kirby's answer is? Crickets. Don't have anything for you. Don't have anything to announce. Nothing to say, but you know, like, we need the resource, we need Congress, all right, let's hear it.
Is the administration still considering executive action on the border? I don't have any announcements to make with respect to executive action. I would remind that, you know, this argument that the president hasn't taken executive action or is just not true. He has kept American troops down there at the border. He has worked as commander-in-chief with the government of Mexico to improve their ability to try to stem that flow and to go after fentanyl traffickers. I mean, it's not as if he hasn't, but there is a real limit that what really needs to be done. Limit. If you really care about the border and stemming the flow, is additional resources. And the president can't just sign those into being. You got to have funding behind that. You have to have a checking account for that. And that comes from the power of the person. That comes from Capitol Hill.
No, you know what it comes from, John Kirby? It comes from the mindset and the attitude and the leadership of this administration. It took us until after the reelection campaign started for the administration to even acknowledge that there's a crisis at the border. We were all gaslit and told, crisis? What crisis? There's no crisis. The border's secure. It's orderly. This administration has done more than anyone. If only Congress would pass our comprehensive immigration reform to allow us to put millions of more new citizens into this country every year. No. What you can do, if you actually want to secure the border, it starts with firing Joe Biden, firing John Kirby, firing Karine Jean-Pierre, Alejandro Mayorkas. It starts with a change in leadership, a change at the top. If you want to take executive action, they had no problem taking executive action at the beginning of the administration to undo all the things that Trump and the Trump administration had put in place. He says the president of Mexico is very appreciative to President Biden. Of course he's appreciative. He's appreciative because Mexico has gotten to eat our lunch. They get to pick and choose when to play nice, when to help, when to exacerbate the situation. They've been able to negotiate. They've gotten money. They've gotten aid. And guess what? They've created an open pathway for anyone from all over the world. These aren't people that are just coming from Central America and South America and Mexico. These are people coming from Africa and China and all different parts of the world. And they're not coming here because it's most convenient. They're coming here because they want the American way of life, which is fine. That's a fine reason to want to come here, but let's have an orderly process. And the orderly process can't be the federal government telling Texas you can't defend the sanctity and the security of your own sovereign state. I mean, not that Texas is sovereign from the United States, but that they have borders that they should be able to protect and defend from people from out of the country coming in. There is no other country on the face of the planet that treats our border with such disdain, that treats their border with disdain. People defend their borders. They enforce their borders. They care who's coming in and out of their country. And we should too. And Biden doesn't. Biden could take action, hasn't taken action. And this lie that like, oh, well, we don't have any executive actions. Like there aren't any meaningful ones. BS. There's plenty more that you can do. And voters, I mean, the biggest thing that you can do if you want more secure borders is to fire Joe Biden. Like that's really the end of it. And so all these people that want to say to Ronna McDaniel, like, how are you going to vote for Trump? If you disagree with him about the January 6th, the people who've been prosecuted, you wouldn't pardon them. Are you really still going to vote for Trump? And she says, yes. What's my alternative? It's to vote for Biden. Not doing that. And like, that's where we find ourselves. And so the Democrats have done this to themselves. Biden has 100% redefined the job of Border Patrol from actually securing the border to figuring out and getting gold stars for how many people they process into this country, whether they're here legally, illegally, whether they need an excuse, whether they can claim asylum, whether their asylum claim is going to fail. They don't care. That's what they think the job of the Border Patrol is. And if Texas wants to defend themselves, they stand in the way. And so, yes, there are things they could do with executive action. And when Kirby says they can't, KJP says they can't. I mean, it's just shameful. It's really shameful. And it tells you what's at stake. All right, end of rant. I'm sure Howie's going to have much more on that. He'll also break down what's going on with President Trump and these different rulings that were handed down today. I think it's good news to see common sense prevail and that the bond amount has been reduced from the $454 million to $175 million. Stay right here for Howie Carr coming up next.